Hi, I'm Tim Humphries, and I've been chatting to Traitors TV star and former soldier Harry Clark about his latest BBC One TV show, Harry Clark Goes to Rome. Now, this show might sound like an idea that's come from military banter in the mess. Get this, to travel to Rome and put questions to the Pope. That's the challenge that Harry has set himself this Easter 2026. In the TV documentary, we also see how Harry's faith shapes him, how it strengthened him through mental and physical challenges while serving in the army, and the programme also explores the relevance of faith and belonging today. Our chat does touch on topics of poor mental and physical health. The reality TV personality and social media influencer visited us at BFBS, the Forces Station. He started our chat by sharing how this new TV challenge idea came about on the set of the BBC's Pilgrimage.
I was at a point in my life where I knew what faith was and I knew what it meant to me, but it was just cloudy. So the Pilgrimage was like the cloth or the wipe that cleaned the lens and allowed me to see that I was in the right path and I was doing something that meant a lot to me, and I just need to keep moving forward in that.
That's a really good, clear analogy of that. On the Pilgrimage, we saw you take some really personal, really intimate moments praying there on screen. What was that like?
Yeah, do you know what? Easiest answer is I hated that, funny enough, because when I do stuff and I do stuff on TV now, look, to be honest with you, I never expected any of this to happen. I went onto the Traitors with a true intention of being a traitor, winning the money so me and my partner could take the next step in our life, get a house. You know, I'd set myself up with a job outside of the army, and that was it. That's all it was supposed to be. And then from speaking to a few people and a story I could go into for ages about an Uber driver I met, and he told me how, you know, seeing me on TV brought him and his sons closer together because they could resonate with me. That was the moment where I was like, okay, I'm going to carry on. So when it came to TV, it was like, well, I don't really know that there's a career in this for me. I'm going to give it a bash because people want me to. But then when it comes to the TV that I do, I want it to be authentic. So when it came to the Pilgrimage and me praying on the camera, I never actually wanted to do it. And why I say I hated it was because the last thing I wanted people to think was, oh, he's just doing this to do it for camera and he's just making this up. And that's the last thing I wanted, because actually it meant something to me. And you actually see me in the Pilgrimage basically tell the cameraman to go away, because it's a private moment always, and like faith is a private connection. So yeah, when I was on the Pilgrimage, I actually hated it, because like I said, I didn't want people to think that I was just doing it to be someone I'm not, and I want people to see everything I do and think it's authentic to them and something that they can resonate with.
Here we are a year later after the Pilgrimage. And just bring us up to date with then, just very briefly, how did the idea come about to try and meet and presumably interview the Pope? Because for me, and probably for you with your background in the army, it sounds like some forces banter in the mess or something like that.
The story literally originates from that as well. So imagine it came from the Pilgrimage, like I said, and long story short, picture this, we was at a German hostess's little pilgrim house where there's a farm, donkeys walking around, cockerels, and I'm there, you know, and I'm bathing in a wooden bathtub the next morning. But this woman was amazing, but she didn't speak a word of English. So we finished filming and she's come in and I've got my Google Translate out, and she's basically told us, you know, in wintertime, this place where our farm is in the valley is covered in snow. So before winter comes, they have to finish everything, all of the food, all of the drink. And she said, here's a present from me to you. On Google Translate, I've made these homebrewed beers. So she brought in two trays of these homebrewed beers. And I'm sat there with Tom, which was a producer for CTVC, the same production company that's made Harry Clark Goes to Rome. And we're sat there, and like you do, just in a mess, you know, we're drinking these beers and we're just firing ideas at each other. And he's told me, what do you want to do next? You know, and I'm sat there and I'm telling him about the ideas I have for documentaries to help people in the army, you know, to help youngers see the army is not all bad, but then likewise to help people who are in the army to see that civilian life isn't all bad, to help people who are struggling with mental health and problems like that I've been through in my life. And then he goes, but as a Catholic, what would you want to do next? And at this point on the Pilgrimage, you know, my faith had deepened massively, but I still like to say I was a modern Catholic. I didn't really believe in the church, the scandals it had been through. You know, I just believe that you could be as close to God sat at home on the end of your bed as you can be going to church every Sunday. So he said, well, what would you do? And I said, well, you know, I'd just go to Rome, ask the Pope all these questions and see what he's got to say about it. He sort of knocked me like, yeah, all right, mate, imagine we've had these few home brew beers, didn't think anything of it. And then for the next year, I've just gone, no, like, this is what I want to do if I want to deepen my faith. Like, if you had a problem in school and your teacher wasn't giving you the right answers that you necessarily needed, well, who would you go to? Just a head teacher. So it's just like that. And that's where the idea formed. And like I said, I think anyone in the army thinks the same way. You know, when you're laying there in bed, your ideas are just firing. And it was just one of them moments where we was drinking homebrew beers in the middle of the Alps. And I came up with this crazy idea.
So like you say, then your faith really does form part of who you are, shapes your identity. You grew up in a close-knit family living in a council house in Slough. How central was religious belief back then for you and your family?
Yeah, do you know what? This is the best thing about Harry Clark Goes to Rome, because what I want to show to people is it doesn't have to be that deep. And everyone always, like, religion is deep. Yeah, of course, don't get me wrong. But actually, when you see the documentary, you realise it wasn't a strong focal point. You know, I never introduce myself to someone and go, hi, I'm Harry Clark, I'm a Catholic, because you just don't do that. So it's the same with faith growing up. You know, my mum made us go to church each Sunday, but most of the time I went to church to make her not disappointed and allow her to let me out on a Sunday afternoon. So it wasn't really something that we all had to talk about, which is why I love my documentary so much, because at the start of the documentary, you have that hidden Easter egg, you know, because you see the loved ones around me and you see the people who make me me. And actually, when you look at it, you know, you see my partner, Anna, you see my best friend, you see my dad, for example, my older brothers, none of them believe in God, or they don't believe in God the same way I do. But guess what? We still have love and we still have peace. These are the closest people to me. And I think that's so nice, because in a world like today, it just shows that no matter what you believe in or who you trust and who you love, you can still get on. And that's the main thing for me. And yeah, so like I said, growing up, it wasn't really a focal point. It was just something we'd done.
And of course, you were close to fellow soldiers when you served in the army as well. How much did your Catholic faith become part of yours and others soldiering and other conversations around belief?
Yeah, do you know what? It was one of them things, like I said, it wasn't really something we really talked about, which is why it's so great now, because it feels like I've been given the opportunity to speak about it. It's funny, because every time I do a radio interview or I do something and people question me about the show, it's like, oh, how come you're talking about it now 2 years later? It's like, because no one asked me 2 years ago, because I would have been the exact same way. It's just, we had, like, no one's really asked a question. Like I said, because it's a scary topic and it's people don't really know how to feel about it, and people can be a bit, you know, you look at each other who talk about faith and you think this guy's a religious nutcase, but you never really bring it into conversation. And it's never really been, when I was in the army, it was never really a topic of conversation. And if anything, my faith was probably the weakest in the army, and then it was stronger when I went through my own personal battles. And that's when I found it, when I came around 20 years old while I was serving in the forces.
Just talk us through that then, and how your faith strengthened, gave you comfort and gave you that resilience then from what you've alluded to there.
Yeah, of course. I mean, I was 16, joined the army, and you're a boy in a man's world. And the army is amazing. You know, I love the army for all the qualities it's taught me. And even when it taught me how to deal with these emotions through this hard period. But at the same time, you join and you sort of realize what man can do to man, and you see things that, and it's a bit like, well, if there's a God in this world, why is all this stuff happening? And then on top of that, you know, the thing that probably hit me the most was the friends I'd lost to suicide. And that really sat with me the most, because it was like, they've lost the war in their own mind instead of the war we're trained to do. So then it's always like, oh, they could have spoke to me one more time, or they could have done this. And at this period in my life, you know, my faith was at its weakest. And like I say, it's always like a wave, just like any personal connection. Some days it's weaker and other days it's really strong. And then I was deployed and I was overseas. You know, I was about 20 years old now. Like I said, my faith was at its weakest. I'd split up with a partner who I was with 7 years. So it was like, you had that first heartbreak. It's like, no one ever's going to love me again. Then I was like medically called back from where I was abroad. And I was told, you know, I need to stop drinking and smoking, because that's all I sort of turned to. Then I was basically losing my mind. I had kidney stones for a second time, which really hurt. Like, that's the worst pain in the world. And for some reason, I was 19 and it's like 19, 20. Why is this happening again? You know, and then so I was in and out of hospital. At the same time, I thought it can't get much worse. I was then jumped, lost my two front teeth. I had a bleed on the brain, fractured skull. So I was never allowed to box again. And, you know, my whole reason for joining the army was to be able to box and get paid for it, become a tracksuit soldier, really. So it was like, everything I had and loved in my life was just going wrong. And it was like, it can't get much worse. And it just did. And it got worse and worse and worse. I lost self-confidence. And then that's when I really struggled with my mental health. And I was basically done. And I remember I said to my mum, who is the angel in my life? And I went to her, you know, and I said to her, look, I've used up all my resources here. There's really nothing I can do now. And I feel like a burden on everyone else. You know, you and my family are putting up with me every day, crying, sobbing, doing this, drinking, smoking, whatever, in and out of hospital. And my mum was a nurse at the time. So she'd do a 12-hour shift, then have to come and sit with me because I've done something or my head's bleeding or something else has happened. So I just said to her, you know, I've used it all up. I don't know where to turn now. She said to me, what's the one thing you know how to do? And she was like, just pray. So at that moment there, just before my 21st birthday, I thought, you know what? I've done everything else under the sun to try and get better. I still feel this way. Might as well give it a go. And then this is where I say, you know, I spent then, and it didn't happen overnight. It wasn't like I just started praying. And this is my thing, you know, some people might call it therapy and some people might call it meditation. And it doesn't really matter. It worked. It worked for me because I spent my time, you know, I set my alarm where I'd have an hour where I was just annoyed with God and I'd F and blind and swear at him and say, I can't believe you've done this, can't believe you've done that. At the end of the hour, it's like, well, has that changed anything? No, I'm still angry. What's the point in wasting any more time being angry? So then I'd move on to thanks, you know, thanks for allowing me to sit on a bed under a roof. Allow me for, if I want to go get a fresh glass of water, I can. What I started doing then subconsciously was realizing I'm so much better off than millions around the world. How selfish of me to feel this way. And that's when my gratitude started building towards everything I had in life. And then, yeah, I just started praying for strength. Allow me to see my little sister's birthday in the January. Allow me get to here. Then once I did, that was another milestone checked off. And then that's why I say now I like to think of it and look back on it as in God tests his toughest soldiers. And then I just use my faith now as my armor each day. And that's where the story began. That's where my faith was its strongest. And then obviously I was still in the military at the time, got asked to coach the boxing team instead of boxing, which was amazing. That saved me. And then, yeah, I just had the best 2 or 3 years. And that led me up to the point of being asked to go on the traits.
And when you were serving there then in uniform, to what extent were you having those conversations, or did people ask you about kind of, you know, what gives you strength, what gives you hope through those moments? Because presumably you were, you know, knocking around, having that camaraderie with other soldiers.
Yeah. I think it was quite nice because once I started realizing what really helped me, people would then talk to me as well. And I became like that rock or foundation for my mates who were struggling with things outside of the army or struggling with other things that might be happening in their life. You know, they'd come to me for advice. And it was really nice because it was like you could relate with each other. And I think that's the best thing about the army is, you know, whether you're in a hole somewhere in around the world getting rained on, at least you're there with someone else next to you and you're both going through the same thing. So it was nice because at that point in my life, I had sort of been through them experiences where I understood it, you know, and it's the same with mental health. Like once you've been there, you understand how cloudy it can be for you, how dark time it can be and how you can't really see the light. But once you've been there, you can resonate with people, which is what I now try and do. And obviously, while I was in the army, I did that too.
That's really inspirational. Thank you for sharing that. Mm-hmm. And I'm sorry you had to go through those times of poor physical and mental health. Here you are then. We know you as a winner of one of the series of Traitors. We've seen you on TV and as an influencer on social media. Talking of social media, I've got to ask, with your new show, I mean, I'm just going to say, how do you slide into the DMs of the Pope, right?
Well, I mean, when it came around, obviously, I had to prove that I was going to do everything to try and get there. And it's when I set myself a challenge, just like anyone else in the force, once you set yourself a challenge, your mind is just locked in. So it was like, I tried every single possible way of getting in contact with the Pope. And it's like, well, how else would you? In a modern day like today, well, I have social media, I have a following on Instagram. Who knows? Send him a DM and maybybe he replies. You never know. I don't even know if he runs his account, you know, but it's worth a try. Yeah. And I mean, I sent letters, handwritten letters. I sent emails. I even called the Vatican to the point where they put the phone down on me because they thought I was a nutcase. So yeah, I do try everything in this show.
Talking seriously though, I mean, ultimately, what did you want to say to those in leadership in the Vatican?
Yeah, I think it was so many questions. You know, there was questions for me personally. And then also it felt like I had not the weight, but I had the people at home as well who I was asking for. You know, I was trying to be that person who people can ask questions through. So for example, for me personally, it was, well, is there such a thing as a good or bad Catholic? Because surely if I spend my weeks drinking, smoking, sinning, and then I ask for forgiveness on a Sunday, and then I do it all again the next week, well, then surely I'm a terrible Catholic compared to someone who devotes their whole life to God. So then actually, what's the point? because I could just believe in God but be the worst person ever, sin my whole life, and as long as I ask for forgiveness right at the end, then I'm saved. You know, so then it's like, well, that's a bit pointless, because the worst people around the world who do the most unimaginable things could still ask for forgiveness and be saved, which didn't really sit well in my conscience, because it's like, well, surely they can't do that and then get away with it, you know, because then I'll do this and try to get away with that. You know, so that was a question, like, is there such thing as a good or bad Catholic? I have many friends who are gay as well, like, and they feel like they're not loved by the church, or for some reason there's this misconception that they can't go to church. So it was going there asking these questions, you know, is everyone accepted by the church? Do you have to be a certain type of people, or is the church open for everyone, no matter whether you're gay, straight, bisexual, brown, white, blue, purple? You know, does it actually matter? Has the church modernized? For example, I don't really believe the Bible word for word. I believe it's just a story simplified for people like you and I to understand. So it was all of these questions I had on my mind to go in there to ask, hopefully, the hierarchy and see how they dealt with it.
Definitely. And of course, we'll see on the telly whether you got the answers, the answers you wanted, and then obviously sharing those with loved ones as well. But touching on some of those subjects that you brought up there, I'm thinking, you know, in our world, in our changing world, formal corporate religion is often viewed with cynicism. How do you think this show will be seen by, you know, people our age, your age, and others?
Well, I mean, hopefully they love it. Firstly, and like I said, my main goal for the show was, you know, a Catholic to be able to sit next to a Jewish person, to be able to sit next to a Muslim, to be able to sit next to an atheist, and they all get something from the documentary. You know, my whole life I've been called a Bible basher, so it was basically, I don't want this show to be a Bible bashing show, because it's not just about my religion, it's about how I live it every day, and it's about how you can live with religion side by side and not be embarrassed. And actually, why do you have to care what anyone else says? You know, like I said, another main reason for doing the show was my little sister believes in God, but I don't even think her friends know she believes in God. But if she can see her big brother on a BBC One show talking about it, then actually she can think, well, I can say it if I want to say it, or I can believe in it if I want to believe in it. I don't have to feel like I'm a weirdo. So, you know, so it's kind of giving people, no matter what they believe in, a show that they can watch and think, you know, maybe, well, Harry's cool, or hopefully they think I'm cool. He still believes, but actually it doesn't consume his life. No one thinks of him differently. So why am I so worried about what people think of me? Because ultimately, I'll tell people this, you know, like, I would rather live my life 90 to 100 years believing and then be wrong, rather than live 90 to 100 years not believing and still be wrong. You know, because if I get to the end of my life and there is no God, touch wood, that doesn't happen soon, and then you said to me, oh, Harry, do you regret it now? I'd say, no, absolutely not. Because even if there's a God or heaven or not, actually, I've lived my life being the best possible version of myself. You know, I'm taught how to love thy neighbour as I've loved you. I'm taught how to be nice. So why would I not want to live this one life that we've all got to the best of its ability? So that's the main reason. Like I say, it doesn't have to be that deep.
On that thing of being the best version of yourself, for young service personnel, there is that real drive in defence for soldiers, sailors, aviators to bring their quote unquote their whole self to their work. That must then really kind of encourage you that defence now are kind of taking that direction.
Yeah. And I think they were already taking it when I was serving too, because all of the qualities I now have, it's thanks to the army. You know, I've always given praise to the army, because I always say it's that molding factory. It's that molding factory where I joined with all of the abilities I have now and some bad abilities, but it sort of carved them out and sort of molded everything else together, which makes me Harry. So if it wasn't for the army in my life, I don't know where I'd be right now, you know, or what type of person I would be. But the army taught me, you know, to be not only resilient and have discipline, you know, even the fact of I still make my bed every morning now, just because it makes me happy. And, you know, having that discipline that I can carry for the rest of my life, but mainly having the courage to sort of take new steps and go into hard challenges. I mean, I'm trying to meet the Pope. How many people in the world can say that, you know?
Yeah, so it's like,
but if I listened to everyone else, I wouldn't be here today, you know? And from the army alone, I say I love this that I say about my life in 25 years. The best thing I've learned is that before you win, people will say or ask you why you're working so hard. And then when you win, they'll just tell you got lucky. So from the army, I've learned, you know, like, stop trying. No, I don't try and impress anyone. I just try and better myself each and every day.
I mean, there is a lot of talk around about masculinity, what it means to be a man, what it doesn't mean to be a man. And some of those others, like Andrew Tate and others, who are influencing boys and young men. In your experience as a soldier, having gone through that, and, you know, to listeners around the world as well, you know, the army talk about putting that moral fibre in a soldier. In your view, in your experience, how can the army speak into that space of what it means to be a man?
Yeah, I think it's very funny because even just my opinion on that is the best way to be a man is to just be the version of yourself that you want to be. I think it's the best way to be. For example, I don't really let anyone hold me back. I just be myself each and every day, and that makes me me and that makes me happy. And I think that's different for every single person. So for the army, it's just about letting people be free. You know, like giving them the qualities that I've had, but I've been allowed to grow into them qualities and sort of take it in my stride and then go and achieve whatever I want to do in life, which hopefully people see just from my track record that actually, if he can do that, I can go on and do this. You know, not necessarily just with TV, but just anything in life. You know, I never thought I would have won the Traitors. No, hardly anyone did, you know, because I was talking too much or I was the youngest in there. No, everything I do in life is just an achievement of, I don't really let anything hold me back. So I think the best version of being a man is being the best version of yourself. Mm-hmm. And that whoever that is who you want to be, you know, whether it's however you view things, whether it's you want to do musical theatre and dance, or whether you want to be a boxer and play football, all of them types are men to me. Like, and I think that, like I said, the best version of being a man and being in the army is being yourself and being free and not letting anyone hold you back.
TV personality and former soldier Harry Clark chatting to me, Tim Humphreys. And if you or someone you know has been affected by topics raised in this interview, there's more support online at our website, bfbs.com/mentalhealth.